Call to order this regular meeting of the City of Unalaska Council at 6 p.m. on Thursday, March 9th. I'll ask Councilman Nicholson to read the mission statement, please.
To provide a sustainable quality of life through excellent stewardship of government.
Thank you, Councilman Nicholson. Have a roll call, please.
Certainly, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Bell?
Here.
Ms. Coleman?
Here.
Ms. Luby?
Here.
Mr. Nicholson?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Present.
Mr. Tungle?
Here.
And Mr. Tudikoff?
Here. We do have a quorum. All members present. This time, please join Councilman Bell as we do the Pledge of Allegiance.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. Welcome all the visitors in the council chambers and online. We have any? Let's see. Next item is the adoption of agenda. May I have a motion and a second to adopt the agenda?
I make a motion to adopt the agenda.
Second.
I'll make a motion to amend the agenda to add an executive session to discuss personnel issues related to the city manager.
I'll second.
Been moved and second to amend the agenda by Councilman Robinson, seconded by Councilman Luby to add executive session. On the agenda will be item number 14. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call on the amendment.
Certainly, Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Luby?
Yes.
Coleman?
Yes.
Tungle?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
And Bell?
Yes.
A roll call vote on the amendment passes 6-0. We need a motion. Any further changes on the agenda? Hearing none. Roll call, please.
Certainly. Nicholson?
Yes.
Luby?
Yes.
Coleman?
Yes.
Tungle?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes. A roll call vote of 6-0 in favor of the adoption of the amended agenda. I have a motion and a second to approve the proposed minutes of February 28th meeting.
Move to approve the minutes of the February 28th meeting.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Robinson, seconded by Councilman Nicholson. Is there any objections to approving of the minutes? Hearing none, no objection. The proposed minutes are approved. Item six, reports. The first one is the financials. I'll turn this over to the city manager to introduce.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you. I've got our finance director, Clay Darnell, on the line. I'm going to ask Clay to walk you through our financials.
You're unmuted, Mr. Darnell. Go ahead.
Unmute, please.
Clay, if you're using your cell phone, you'll have to hit star six on that to unmute.
This is Clay.
We can hear you now,
Clay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you. Sorry, counselors. These are our unaudited financial reports for the 7 months ended January 31st, 2023. The table of contents lists the reports, and the memo has a summary for the activity that's contained in these reports, and I'm available to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Anyone have any questions on the finances for January 31st unaudited?
I don't.
Okay. Apparently, there's no questions for you, Peyton. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Our next item is the city manager's report. Turn it over to you, Bill.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. So just two things I'll probably bring to light of the four. The staff submitted a grant application last week to the Community Transportation Program in support of the Captain's Bay Road project, about $3.1 million. So we'll be waiting to see what support or answer we get on that. And this week we've been going through all the departmental budgets and gotten through all but two, I think, two left. So I can get that to that tomorrow. If there's any questions on the manager's report, I'll be happy to try and answer those. Thank you.
Hey, is that got questions, Councilman Robinson?
Yeah, just I guess the Juneau lobbying trip got. It got shortened.
It's my understanding, yes, that it got shortened. And for those of us that are coming back here, it'll be on Tuesday.
Right. So I haven't seen an email on that, but I see the plane tickets changed.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I think I can talk a little bit to that. I've been in constant communication with Diane Bloomer, and there's a lot of people who are out of town on different staffs, like the governor's staff, etc. And so I told her there were very few meetings on Tuesday. I told her to put them all on Monday if she could, and she did that so that folks could go home.
Thank you. And I was also in those discussions with Diane. I think that's a good idea. Save us a couple of days, you know. Understand?
Yeah, the most, Mr. Mayor, if I could, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Chris.
The most important meetings are with Bryce Edgman and Lyman Hoffman. But Bryce is in charge of capital projects for the House. Lyman is in charge of capital projects for the Senate. And so those meetings are very important. And also, we're going to have a dinner on Monday night that we'll be able to visit with them pretty good at length. So anyway, just 2 cents there.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Chris or Bill? All right, thanks. We'll move on to item number 8, community input and announcements. This is a time for members of the public to provide information to the council or make announcements of interest to the community. Please come to the podium, state your name, and let's hear your good news.
My name is Amanda with the Parks and Recreation and Culture Department. I'm just announcing that we have on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, our St. Patty's Day Dive, which we organize as a community swim meet, and it's available to all. It raises awareness for APIA's intensive outpatient program. So if you guys are interested, it starts at 6:30, and all are welcome. And if you're not a swimmer, you're still welcome to cheer people on who are swimming. That's it.
Okay, thank you. That was on 17th. All right, thanks.
On the front beach?
Hello, good evening, everyone. USAFE is holding a free movie screening in honor of Women's History Month. Please join us at the World War II Visitor Center on Wednesday, March 15th at 6 p.m. to see the movie 9 to 5, The Story of a Movement. Light refreshments will be served and all are welcome. We hope to see you there. And if you have questions, to call them at 581-1500. Also, the soup off will be on the last Saturday of the month, which is the 25th. And as a senior, not a senior, as a preschool parent, I am selling ice cream social tickets for preschool. So the ice cream social helps raise money for classroom materials, supplies, curriculum, scholarship funds, and more. So the tickets this year is $10 per ticket. So I'll be selling them, and you can buy them from any preschool parent or at the door too. So Ice Cream Social will be on April 22nd from 1 to 4 p.m. at the elementary gym. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
City Clerk has a couple announcements. You've heard these before. Next week is your deadline for the POFD council members who have not turned it in yet. Next week. Also, I think we have some school board members that need to get theirs turned in as well. And then March 31st is the deadline for that sales tax refund for senior citizens. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Any further comments from... Go ahead.
So I have an announcement. The corner store, which used to be V's across from the school, is going to open on Monday morning. So anybody that has been waiting, we will open on Monday morning at 7:30 in the morning, so until 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah, that's good. I see you busy over there, moving a lot of boxes in and out. Anyone have you want some? Written comments submitted or on the Zoom or telephone?
There were none, Mr. Mayor.
Anyone present wish to speak? Other than last chance. All right. Next item is a public comment on the agenda items.
Oh, Mr. Mayor, I'm sorry. I apologize for interrupting. I just saw that Denise Rankin has her hand up and I didn't see it until just now. So, Denise, I just sent you an unmute request.
Thank you very much. This actually, Mr. Mayor, Council, is for the agenda item. I raised my hand too soon. I apologize. I just wanted to thank you for considering increasing the elder tax refund. My understanding is some stores no longer offer senior citizen discounts, so any help for our elders is really appreciated. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Denise, anyone else on Zoom or telephone?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. We'll move on to the next item, public comment on the agenda items. This time for members of the public to provide information to the council regarding items on the agenda. If they don't want to wait until the item comes up for regular agenda. To comment later during the regular agenda, you need to sign up with the city clerk. If you do want to speak, please come to the podium. Nobody? Okay, city clerk, any written comments submitted or anyone on Zoom?
No, sir. Phone?
No one?
No.
Okay, thanks. Council? Nope. All right, we'll move on to next up is the work session. We have a motion and a second to go into work session.
I'll make a motion to go into work session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Luby, second by Councilman Nicholson to go into work session. If there is any objection, no objection. We are in a work session at 6:14. I'll turn this over to the city manager.
Okay, thank you. So this matter is brought to you as a result of council directive initiated in February, where you instructed us to conduct research and provide information to council regarding the senior citizen sales tax refund and to determine if the refund amount should be increased due to costs of living increases, and whether or not council should consider tightening eligibility requirements for the refund. Margie Peter prepared the work in the memo, so if you have any questions, she'd be happy to answer those.
Thank you for that, Bill. I believe there I would have to abstain from this vote because I will benefit in the end if there's any raise in the amount of money. If that's the case, then I'll have to abstain myself from the vote. Councilman Luby.
Also, I just have to note that I could possibly have a financial gain as well if we decide to increase the rate as well. So I'll abstain from the vote, but I will make comment.
Okay. I don't think we're going to be voting this evening anyway. This is just a work session item, but we'll keep that in mind for future stuff.
I'm not there yet.
Pretty soon. Okay, this is for a discussion. I understand that, but I just want to make it clear that I have filed paperwork for the fund refund. So
sure,
I will be a part of the discussion, I'm sure. All right, any council discussion at this time?
Well, I did have a presentation to make. If you'd like me to go through the elements of the memo, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah.
Okay, so through the mayor and the city manager, this item, as we've already said, is on the agenda in response to your directive to us. And it was a two-pronged directive, really. I can get my screen to work here. There we go. So you requested information so you can decide whether to increase the amount of refund based on the cost of living increase, and whether council should consider tightening the eligibility requirements. So I thought I'd just put the eligibility requirements up there. They're pretty simple, just three. You have to be 65 years of age on or before March 31st, file a timely application, and be a resident of the city for at least 30 days prior to your application. Now, those first two elements are pretty easy to determine. Your age is determined by your ID, of course, and a timely application. We don't have any problem administering those two elements of the eligibility requirements. Sometimes when it gets to resident of the city, as is defined in code, it's not as always as easy to determine. And the reason for that is, well, let's go through the definition of resident of the city that's in code. So the purposes of this subsection, it means a person who is physically present in the city with the intent to remain indefinitely in the city and to make a home in the city. The individual must also have maintained a principal place of abode in the city for at least 30 consecutive days immediately preceding the date of the application for the refund. And a person demonstrates that intent required under this section through establishing and maintaining customary ties indicative of residence in the city and through the absence of those ties elsewhere. Physical presence in the city is not by itself sufficient to establish residency. So because we at times question a resident's or an applicant's residency for various reasons, in 2018, I added several questions to the application to help us determine if they're a resident. And so what we ask now on that application, in addition to their residence and mailing addresses, we ask them the date they established their residency in Unalaska, ask them when they plan to leave Unalaska, ask them, do you intend to remain in Unalaska indefinitely and make Unalaska your home? And is your primary residence outside of Unalaska? Well, the results of that, in 2018, I had 25 applicants that we deemed ineligible because they answered yes to the question, is your primary residence outside of Unalaska? And I was thinking, well, that worked. Yay. Well, the following year, a third of those people reapplied and change their answer to no, because we sent them a letter saying, here's why you're not, you know, we're not going to give you the refund and here's why. Well, then in 2019, we had 13 additional applicants who were deemed ineligible for the same reason. And the following year, half of them reapplied, more than half actually, and again, changed that answer to no. So in 2022, just a couple of other little pieces of information that we kind of have found as we were administering this is that in 2022, 32% of the applicants provided residence addresses at local seafood processing facilities. And that percentage raised to 36% in 2023. And in 2023, so the applications we've received so far, 77% of the applicants who give addresses at seafood processing facilities weren't registered to vote. And the ID that they supply is almost always an Alaska ID card. And the reason I pointed out that Alaska ID card is that that's used primarily for the seafood processing workers is because of observations we've made as we're administering the refund. And I'll just give you one example. One person was asked, you know, to provide their ID, which we used to, you know, identify that they are who they say they are, but also, you know, your date of birth is on there. Well, so they handed over a California driver's license. And then when they realized they did that, they pulled it back and gave me an Alaska ID card. So it's little things like that that happen that make you wonder, are they really residents of Unalaska? They may be, I don't know. But we just don't have any tools really to establish that absence of ties, you know, that's defined in code, the absence of those ties elsewhere. We don't really have anything to check. How do I know that they are or are not, do or do not consider themselves a resident of Unalaska? So some alternatives for eligibility. You could decide to do nothing and leave it as it is. You might be fine with, you know, allowing those folks to have the refund, anyone who's here for 30 days and files an application and is 65. If you wanted, you could ask me to enhance the application questions, though I don't think that would solve the issues that I'm seeing right now. So that alone, I don't recommend. Or you could choose to amend code to increase the eligibility standards. And the three things I could think of is you could require U.S. citizenship, you could require Alaska voter registration at an address in Unalaska, or you could require PFD eligibility. And the reason I don't think that just enhancing the application questions is enough, unless it's part of the requirements, just asking more questions isn't probably going to get us where we might want to be with that. So I'll just review voter registration qualifications. So our code says you're to qualify to vote, you have to be, qualified under state elections pursuant to Alaska Statute 1505.010, have been a resident of the city for 30 days immediately preceding the election, be registered to vote in state elections at a residence address within the city at least 30 days before the election, and not disqualified under Article 5 of the state constitution. And then I just put out the major elements of Alaska Statute 1505.010 there. So the basic requirements to register to vote are U.S. citizenship, at least 18 years of age, resident of the state and house district in which you seek to vote for at least 30 days, be registered before the election, and not registered to vote in another jurisdiction. And if you're wondering what the disqualification under Article 5, that is for folks who've been convicted of felony and their rights haven't been restored, or if they've been deemed of unsound mind and that hasn't been restored. Those are a couple of things under that Article 5 qualification. And then I thought you might want to look at PFD eligibility. And as we all know, those are pretty strictly enforced. you have to be an Alaska resident for the entirety of the prior calendar year. You have to have a stated intent to remain an Alaska resident indefinitely and not claim residency or benefits of residency in another state or country for the entirety of the prior calendar year, not sentenced or incarcerated for a felony or incarcerated for a misdemeanor with two prior misdemeanors. If you are absent from Alaska for more than 180 days, you have to show that it was an allowed absence. The PFD, however, does not have a citizenship requirement. And another downside of the PFD option might be that senior citizens may choose not to apply for the PFD because it might interfere with their pension or Social Security income. You know, there's limits on those sometimes, and that might put them over the edge. So, you know, that's a lot stronger residency than you presently have in code right now, you know, a year versus the 30 days. And it might disqualify folks who choose not to apply for the PFD for whatever reason. I am told by the PFD folks that as a municipality, we can be allowed access to that database. We'll have to sign a memorandum of agreement with them. I haven't received that authorization already. And I thought I'd wait on that and see if you guys wanted to go that direction. Typically, local governments are allowed access to that for garnishment purposes, like if they have folks that owe the municipality money, and then they can get in there to garnish those. That's typically why, but they might allow it for this purpose. And then there was just some other data I thought, well, you did ask for the number of applicants, so here you go. The average number of eligible applicants from 2017 to 2023 is 94. And I just want to note that the data there for 2023 is just through March 1st, because we're not even through the eligibility or application period yet. That'll run through the end of the month. And with the applications that we just processed earlier this week, I'm pretty sure we're going to get over 125 eligible applicants this year so far. So that number would go up a little bit. But I used the average number of 94 for other data I will supply soon. I thought it would be interesting to look at census information. So I did. And the US Census Bureau statistics indicate there are 210 residents in Unalaska who were counted in the last census who are age 65 and over. But they give you a margin of error. So it's probably somewhere in the range of 120 to 300. Persons. And then I also looked at the consumer price index, because that was another thing you requested. The consumer price index is the most widely used measure of inflation. And the US Bureau of Labor Statistics provides a calculator, a CPI inflation calculator, on their website. And I compared to January 2005, because 2005 is when the senior citizen refund was enacted. So that's why I chose that as a comparison here. So a dollar in January 25, in January 2023, you'd have to have $1.57 to have the same buying power. And then I used the $200 refund amount. In 2005, you'd need $313.76 in 2023 to have the same buying power. And then I also looked at the annual numbers. So $200 in purchasing power in 2005 would require $306 in 2023. And the cumulative rate of inflation is 53.2% from 2005 to 2023. And then as you consider the amount of the refund, another angle might be to look at how many, you know, the dollar amount in taxable purchases that would result in different levels of tax. For example, you'd need, and it takes $10,000 in sales or purchases to pay $300 in tax, because we have that 3% tax. And then the financial implications, which we always try to give you, if any decision you're contemplating, at the $200 amount and that averaged 94 applicants, it costs the city about $18,800. If you raise it to $300, you're going to add another $10,000 to that program. If you raise it to $400, it'll go up to $37,600. So it's not a hugely costly program to the city in one way or another. So your alternatives on the amount, again, you could choose to do nothing and leave it as is. You could discontinue the program, which I don't think that was anything that anybody was contemplating, but that's certainly an option. You could amend code to change the amount. You could also consider exempting from sales tax all sales to senior citizens. However, there are some complications with that, which is why I would not recommend that option. We are now, the city belongs to the Alaska Remote Seller Sales Tax Commission, and we are collecting sales tax on remote sales. And we are required to treat local sellers and remote sellers in a like manner. We can't have different sets of rules for remote sellers and local sellers. And I don't know how I would administer or how the sellers, the retailers, the remote sellers especially, would be able to administer a exemption for sales to senior citizens. I just don't know how that would work. If you wanted me to go down that road, I'd have to do a lot more research and work with the Alaska Remote Seller Sales Tax Commission to see if that's even possible. And also, it shifts the burden to the retailers to determine their age, which is pretty easy to determine, but I think if you went down that road, you would have to necessarily remove the residency requirement, because how are we going to have the retailers determine residency? You know, that's just not workable, which is, I think, why we ended up with the refund program that we have. Even back in 2005, they didn't want that burden on the retailers. So I don't recommend that option. So I'm not really giving any strong recommendations, because of course these are council decisions, but the amount of the refund is certainly up to you. And I am not making a recommendation, though, just looking at the data with the rate of inflation, that $300 amount may be pretty reasonable. And also on the eligibility, again, if you choose to go down that road, I would suggest that applicants for the senior sales tax refund be registered to vote in state elections at a residence address within the city. That would be my recommendation if you choose to tighten the requirements. So that's the end of my presentation, and I'm happy to try to answer any questions you might have.
Thanks, Margie. Dennis?
Have you considered maybe the real ID, which is becoming more and more, it's a requirement to have a real ID anymore. I know a lot of this state is exempt up until a certain day, but maybe we should require a real ID and a driver's license, two pieces of identification. And the real ID will give you a post office box or a physical residence, whatever the applicant chooses. But requiring the driver's license on top of that will give you a pretty good idea that it's out of state. And then the real ID for here, for Unalaska, if they have that, they're going to have to prove residence. And one of those requirements is like a utility bill or that. So maybe that's something we should look at. But I also like to probably increase the number of requirements. You utilize some of the PFD questionnaire or questions, and I'm definitely in favor of increasing the amount. The other probably the last question that would be, how soon can we change this? Can we change it before? No, it's too late to change it in ordinance now before the distribution of the first of this year's.
As far as time, back to your first question, had I considered real ID? No. That hadn't even dawned on me. So that's something to look at. Thank you. And I could look at some of the PFD questions to see if there's something that we could enhance the application with, things that made sense. So I'll look at that again as well. As far as the timing of the any change in the amount, we've already written, we would have to send a second check out to everybody we've already sent a check out to. And you would have to put something in the ordinance specifically to cover that for 2023, which we can do. It's just, you know, we'll have to, it'll be a, you know, a lot of paperwork for both the clerk's office and the finance department. I'm not saying we can't do it, but I'm just letting you know what's involved, because those 80 some applicants that, let's see, we've already cut checks to, or made the arrangements to cut checks to about 120, I think. So we would have, you increase the amount, we'd have to do a second check.
Right. The reason I brought the real idea, because I think in all of the lower 48 states, in order to travel on an airline, you have to have a real ID. So, and trading that in is not as easy in the state of Alaska to be a real ID, to remain a real ID. They would lose their whatever state they were in, until they can prove that they have residency in the state.
They issue them here in Alaska?
Yes, they do. There's a you can Google online what the requirements for a real ID are. Maybe we can post those around the city somewhere so people are aware of it. And the deadline, I think, is coming up pretty quick here for state residents.
Yeah, I know that got extended during COVID, because I think, I don't remember exactly when it is. And I know when they first came out, the public safety and DMV put out a lot of information about how to do the real ID application. But since it got delayed during COVID, I don't know that they picked that back up.
From what I understand, they're actually issuing them here. I mean, I think they have to be mailed in anyway.
Yeah, I got mine, so I know they're doing them here. Yeah.
Councilman Luby, then Councilman Tungo.
Yeah, I think that, so Ms. Rankin's exactly right there with the senior citizen discount at Safeway. They have decided that at first it was every day, and then they decided they would go to once a week, and now they're once a month. It's like, okay, so seniors can only go buy groceries once a month. It's getting really, you know, harder and harder for seniors, and the cost of living going up, the cost of airfare, just everything has put a real burden on our senior citizens. And I feel like, you know, they don't have a means to increase their income like the younger generation does. So they're kind of stuck with whatever they retired at. And so I am in favor of raising the amount. Originally, I was looking at the $400 a month. That's kind of where I was going. And one of the reasons that, or not a month, I'm sorry, $400 reimbursement a year. And the reason, you know, I look at it, it's $13,333 a year. But if you break that down in a weekly basis, that's $256 a week. Anybody that doesn't spend that at the grocery store and gas and, you know, just any essentials, you probably don't have everything you need. And so, I know that, you know, with the price index and the cost of living with the inflation only shows, you know, that it should be right around $300. But I feel like in Alaska is a lot more expensive than the lower 48. And I believe that is for all 50 states. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was not regionalized at all.
So it's, you know, an average, and, you know, and there's different costs in different states depending on where you're at. So I feel like it's not, it doesn't represent an Alaska as well as it does a lot of the lower, you know, the lower 48. And so I would be in favor of moving it up to, you know, $400 a year reimbursement. And you know, and just like I said, it's $256 a week that you have to spend in order to actually spend $400 in sales tax. So as far as the requirements, tightening up the requirements, I do agree that we need to do that as well. I looked at the, you know, PFD requirements, and those are pretty stringent, where you have to be here for a full year. Maybe we don't have to go that far, but I do like the, you know, the register to vote. If you're registered to vote here in Alaska or in the state of Alaska with a residency of an Alaska, you've established residency. Basically, most people, when you're going to move here and you're going to qualify for a PFD, that's the first thing you do, is you go register to vote where you're at. So, but maybe not everybody does, but most people do. But I think that that's an easy thing for you to check here. So, you know, but the real ID, I never thought about that either. That's a, you know, try to make it as simple as possible for administration, I guess, on what way to go. But I do believe they need to be tightened up a little bit to make sure they are residents. And I would be in favor of somehow 6 months or prior to our last local election to have to, you know, have to be registered. If we go with the registered to vote, that you would be registered to vote in the last prior election, just to kind of establish, you know, that's a 6 month residency versus a full year. You know, 30 days, I don't think is enough. That's not a refund. So a refund is, you know, it's part of the refund code, and a refund is something that you've already bought and now you're going to get your money back. So that's just my thoughts on that. But I'd like to hear what everybody else has to say.
Thank you. Councilman Tungle.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I support what the recommendation that put together there with the 300. But if I'll support 400 too. But I don't, 65 and up, I don't think we want to really restrict a lot of restriction. I think if you get dividend, I think that will be good. If they receive dividend, I think permanent fund dividend, I think they're qualified for that. With the voters ID, some of the seniors I know, they don't vote, and I don't think that disqualify them from being a registered voter. So I think having to get the dividend fund with the application that they have in there, I think that will qualify them for a senior discount. I'll go with that. So the recommendation is good. I think I'll go with that. 300 in the recommendation with the staff. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, I do have one piece of information that might be instructive for you. I looked at all of the 2023 applications that we had received as of March 1st. And when I took out that 70, you know, the ones that supplied addresses at seafood processing facilities, of the remaining applicants, every single one of them was registered to vote except one. If that helps you in making your decision. And I will also say that of the applicants that supplied addresses at seafood processing facilities, like I told you, 77% were not registered to vote. So that means that 23% were. There are some, and I don't want to belabor the point like we're targeting folks just because they work at a seafood processing facility. I'm just saying that I looked at it because the question came to my mind. Are they really residents?
Councilman Luby, then Councilman Coleman.
Yeah. So would it be difficult to use the real ID? Just to verify?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I haven't looked. But I hadn't thought of that, so I haven't looked at it at all.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Coleman.
So when I looked at this, I had to go back to look at intent. Why are we doing this? So I wasn't around when they, or I was, but... It wasn't in the decision-making role when this came through. So I'm going to make the assumption that it was because if you're 60, 65 and older, you're on limited income, you have fixed resources, you're probably retired. And so this is a means in which to help alleviate living in a very, you know, expensive area to help alleviate the costs and the burdens of living here. That being said, if you want to really serve your purpose, you not need to be looking at age or your age, but and residency, you probably need to be looking at their income. And I'm not saying you should go down that road, but I mean, truly, because there are 60 people or 65 and older who are working and wouldn't really fit the intent of this. So I'm just saying that if you wanted to meet that intent, you may not be, the residency thing or living here may not really be the point. But I think it's a really good way to fulfill the requirements of this in the easiest way. So I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying that is probably would be the what you really need to be looking at. So that being said, I appreciate looking at this. Obviously, you know, it's important that we review where we're at and where we're going. So eligibility, obviously, we've got some possible fraud, and we want to try to reduce that, make it that people who are doing this are legitimately needing it and meet the requirements of that. So I think you're going to have to add an element. I am not in support of adding additional questions, as in, where do you work? You know, I don't think that would be. But yes, I mean, it is a suggestion, but I would be totally adamant against that one. So adding to it, so I'm not real sure about the real ID qualifications. I mean, I think we're going to have to look into that one too, for, you know, having to travel. So you're going to have to add another layer onto it. And voting to me seems a very, it's at your hands, and it's something that doesn't take a lot of resources, and we can look into it. I think if there is, they say they don't vote, it would be their burden to show proof of PFD eligibility. So it's then on them. If they choose not to be a voter, then it would be on the person putting in the application to show proof that they are a recipient of a PFD. So then we don't have to do that. So that would be my suggestion. So add the extra layer with the voter registration. And like I said, if that person can't show proof of that, then they have to show proof of other means. And I think it definitely needs to be up to the current rate. No problem at all moving that up. Definitely to the 300 level, and I will, and I would entertain a 400 increase also. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Nicholson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is the first I've heard about the real ID thing, and I think that would be a good start there in the voter's registration. And I would stand behind a $400 increase, or up to $400. That is something to help out the seniors and everybody here. But having tightening up on the, you know, qualifications, I think that would be a plus. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Bell.
I'm going to agree with tightening up the eligibility requirements. And I think they're probably somewhere between what's been presented here, a happy medium between tightening up those eligibility requirements and not creating another layer or more work for staff and whatever, you know, whatever future eligibility requirements are in there, that, you know, it becomes the burden of whoever's making the application that they meet that eligibility. As far as the dollar amount, it's not hard at all to spend $300 to $500 in sales tax this down. So increasing the dollar amount, I would definitely support. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Bill. Councilman Robinson.
Yes, thank you. So on the real ID, you can choose whether you can put that on your driver's license or on an ID, a personal ID card. The other thing is you have a choice between a physical address or a mailing address. So maybe having just the requirement of either a real ID or driver's license with a physical Alaska address on it would suffice. And I don't know that we could limit it, and maybe a legal question would limit it to an un-Alaska resident, address. But it's certainly worth looking at. And as far as the voter ID or voter registration, people can are residents of the state, or they can register to vote 30 days after they arrive in the state. So anybody can have that. It's a fairly easy thing to do. But I think the real ID is more restrictive. So I think that's worth looking at and seeing if we can. It may be the only question we have to ask. If we can do it legally with an unless having one or the other in the real ID form, whether it's driver's license or an ID with an Unalaska address, or if we have to expand that to an Alaska address. So.
If I may, Mr. Mayor,
yeah.
On the voter registration, you can actually register on day one that you set foot in Alaska. You can register to vote. So you have to separate registration and voting. You can register as soon as you get here. But to be able to vote in an election in Unalaska, you have to be registered at an address in Unalaska at least 30 days prior to the election. So that's how we know that they've been a resident for 30 days. If they're on Unalaska's voter register. And to vote in any election, you have to be a resident of the state for 30 days. But you can register as soon as you get here.
Okay, thank you. A lot of good comments. I like that idea with having the ID. Real ID. I think having a registration of physical address is important. I'm not really so inclined to think about limiting income or have a limiting income to make you qualified to get any refund. Because then you may drop out a lot of people who receive dividends from the village or regional corporations that puts them over the limit. And that's what this does in some cases. Some, I would say probably half of the people over 65 will not file for it because it affects their income. And some of them are living in senior housing or low-income housing, and they would be booted up. Somebody else would end up in that house or space. So there's a lot of issues for those that live here, the ones we're trying to help. It's unintentional, but it does happen. So when we talk about this again, I think we need to look at what the real ID does. That'll suffice. I really think that getting a increase is needed. I mean, look at our graph that was on there earlier. It's 50% from 2019 to 2023 to buy anything, what you have to buy. Food bank was operational for a period of time, and that, and was a good thing, but seniors are now only getting one day a month for any discount. I don't know why, but that's the way it is. And they were getting them once a week. Now it's once a month. And it's on a certain day. If you're not there, you don't benefit. And like we had the storms here with the snow and everything, they didn't make it over there because they couldn't travel the roads. So, you know, they got a lot of issues. And I know we're trying to help them, but help the elders to get what they need. And we need to define this so that we don't want to cut anybody out that is legally can get assistance because they're not a resident or something. Then, you know, they came from a state or somewhere else that can provide that income. Then we should help try and help them get it. But I don't know. It's an issue. I think we need to have more information, like on the real ID for sure, if that'll work. I don't know if we'll be able to do anything with make it happen for this round. I'd like to see it, but it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of renewing, reapplication. That'll be resent. People that don't have real IDs could take 3 to 4 months to get them. They live here. They mail them out. So I don't, you know, that's a good plan. I support some kind of increase. I'm not going to say what it is because I'm a beneficiary. Maybe I shouldn't apply and just wait for it to happen next year. But already did. I could withdraw my application, right?
But have you cashed that check already?
No, I haven't seen it. Okay. All right. I'll read them. No. Any more questions from council? Councilman Robinson?
So I feel this is, to move this forward, we should probably have a directive at the end of the meeting. I think Councilmember Luby has one. But I'd like to have included in that some proposed language to give the retroactive in that we would, if we decide to increase it. So along with whatever, I haven't seen her directive, but maybe we can have that included.
Something to think about on that point. If you wanted to make it retroactive, would that be under the new eligibility requirements, whatever you choose for them to be?
I'd like to see that too. If that's an that's a legal option, yeah, absolutely.
Which I don't think we would have if it was just voter registration. I don't think we'd have to have them reapply or anything. I can check today. You know, right now I have that ability to check about voter registration. I have no idea about the real ID thing. Hadn't thought about it, didn't research it.
Can I interrupt? For the sake of continuity, I'm not certain that I support trying to amend rules for a program that we're already in the process of taking applications and have already distributed checks. I wish we had this discussion a few months ago, but to have to go back through, not only do all of this seemed to be post haste, and then try and get checks cut out to people who already have checks. I really don't advise that this time.
Thank you, Councilman Tungo. Any further comment before we move on?
Mr. Tungo, I just sent you an unmute request. There you go. Thanks.
Oh, no, I'm good. No further. No further question, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Luby.
I was kind of just wondering about council's consensus on the time frame, if they were interested in changing the 30-day language or leaving it at 30 days for residency.
Can that come back in some of the options that we would have? Like, what I'd also like to see is the dollar amount and increase if we were to do the retroactive and what that would mean.
Is that a question you're wanting to know? What would be entailed, would be required if you did make it retroactive to 2023?
Right, with the what Councilmember Luby is talking about on the voter ID or voter registration, combined with if we do real ID and if we do a retroactive kind of a new proposal or a new memo outlining that stuff and what our choices are. So,
all right. So if you tightened eligibility to include this real ID option, which I have absolutely no information about, I think all of those people would have to come back in again and provide their real ID if they had it. And does that mean that they weren't eligible for the first check they already got? And what about the second check? You know, I don't know. I think the real ID thing is an intriguing idea, but I think if you made that part of this retroactive thing, it would be a mess. If it was just voter registration, easy, we can do that. And we would just have to cut checks to all those people again to give them a second check, which would require, you know, we have to, it's, you know, the typical paperwork that the city requires to cut a check. We would just have to repeat all of that.
I don't think it's
a lot of paperwork. Is it doable? Yes.
I don't, you know, like I said, that said, I don't think I would support a retroactive and just make it what it is.
The I think going after the requirements for the registered voter and the real ID can be put in there that it becomes effective in 2024, then you've got it covered, because at that point you're given some time to the staff to develop a questionnaire or form that has to be redone based on the real ID, because a lot of what Dennis is saying and what city clerk has brought up is we've already sent like some checks out, and so you're really not going to see anything happen this year at all on that increase. Councilman Coleman.
So it was brought up to change the directive to include that. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because you can always go to legal and, you know, pursue that to see if this really, I mean, there's a lot of, well, we think, and I'm not particularly in favor of it. I'm just saying that I don't think as a directive this particular, it can be put in and it can still be part of the, here's what we're going to, here's really what, you know, this was really what it means. It don't really matter to me either way if it's in there or not. I'll still support the directive, but I'm just saying, you know, then you have that opportunity and time to come back with, you know, real fundamental, here is what it's going to entail. So I don't think that would change. It's just good information to come back with and saying, yes, you were right, because this is really what it means. And legal may come back and say, yeah, that's probably not a good idea. So I will support the director.
Okay, thanks, Councilman Cohen. Councilman Luby.
So just a quick question. So it kind of, what you were saying there kind of made me think that maybe if the directive was not really a retroactive, but maybe something that was in the line of anybody that is currently registered to vote that applied this year, that you would easily be able to issue a second check. Is that what you were saying?
Just to clarify. All right, so process wise, this is just a directive. This is not a final decision on anything. So Councilmember Luby showed me her proposed directive before the meeting, which was, you know, to bring back a proposed ordinance to increase the amount and increase the eligibility requirements to being a voter registered in the state of Alaska at an address in Unalaska. That was her draft directive. to research the Real ID option as well. As far as when the ordinance would be effective, we can write the ordinance in different sections. So you can say this section is effective on this date and this section is effective on this date, meaning it could be different sections for eligibility or the amount or some, you know, we could work that in there. You don't have to make all those decisions tonight, and they do not all have to be memorialized in the directive in that, at that level of detail. Just tell me to start working on an ordinance and to research the Real ID option. I think that'll get us there.
Okay, thank you. Johnson Bell, comment?
Yeah, I would agree with what the clerk or city clerk just said. You know, keep it simple. I'm not in favor of doing anything retroactive. You know, these people applied under a certain set of rules. Go back and change the rules, and you know, it doesn't sound like a sense of fairness. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Nicholson.
No further questions or comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Any more comments from council? Councilman Robinson?
Yeah, I just did a quick Google on Real ID requirements. States other than the state of Alaska have until May 7th. I'm sorry, May 3rd of 2023. Alaska was given an extension to May 7th of 2025. So this might be something that would be a requirement for next year's filing.
Yeah, I would support that. Thank you. All right, there are no further questions or comments. Does anyone present wish to speak to this item, senior tax sales refund?
Thank you. I'm standing here as a member of the public. I would just encourage the council, as they're looking at changing the eligibility for this program, to consider the demographics of our community that are not naturalized citizens, which makes them ineligible to vote and register to vote. So suggestion might be that you consider things like multiple options to prove the residency of Unalaska. I think it's important that we're able to prove the residency of Unalaska, but I think if you hone in on one particular faction like Real ID or registration for voter registration, I think being able to provide some kind of documentation of this is your physical residence and even time of residency, there can be a wide range of that, but we do have a large percentage of our population and some of our most vulnerable seniors are not citizens, and that's a big deal.
Anyone else from chambers or anyone on the phone or Zoom?
I don't see anyone on Zoom, sir. No.
Okay, thank you. I'll request a motion and a second to return to regular session.
Move to return to a regular session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Robinson, second by Councilman Nicholson. Is there any objection? Hearing none. No objection. We're back in regular session at 7:08. We are now on the regular agenda. Persons wishing to speak on the regular agenda items must sign up with the city clerk. First item under the regular agenda item A, review application to transfer ownership of the airport restaurant liquor license. And I'll turn this over to Bill. Chris.
Thank you, Mayor. The city council is charged with reviewing liquor license renewals and applications. And we've accepted this application. We've reviewed it. There doesn't seem to be any problem with it. We had the police go down and make a site investigation of the facility there at the airport restaurant. And there were no violations or anything found. And they're paid up on all of their other city requirements, whether it be utilities or taxes, et cetera. So.
Okay, thank you, Bill. The council, your packet contains a memo from staff reviewing their application to transfer ownership of the liquor license at the airport restaurant. Staff recommends no action. Does anyone want to make a motion? If not, we'll move on. Hearing no action recommended, we'll follow management's recommendation. At this time, I'll turn it over to for the council for discussion. None. City clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
Mr. Mayor, since no motion was made, you can just move on to the next item.
Okay, thanks. All right, we're done with that. Item B. Next up is Ordinance 2023-01, creating a budget amendment number 5 to the fiscal year 2023 budget, accepting the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services Mobile Integrated Healthcare Community Paramedicine Rural Extension of Care Grant for amount of $166,666.66 to fund a mobile medical trailer, accepting the EPA Brownsfield Community-Wide Assessment Grant for $500,000, and increasing the appropriations for generator fuel in the Electric Utility Fund by $1,850,000. We have a motion and a second to introduce Ordinance 2023-01 and schedule it for public hearing and second reading on March 28th.
Move to introduce Ordinance 2023-01 and schedule for public hearing and second reading on March 28th, 2023.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Robinson, second by Councilman Coleman. Turn us over to City Manager, or Assistant City Manager.
Sir, Mayor, thank you. This is a budget amendment. It has two positive amendments. We're accepting grants on two different fronts, both for our EMS and fire, and then for the Brownfields community-wide assessment grant. And then, of course, the other is to increase appropriations for our generator fuel, which, you know, price of fuel has gone up. And that's basically it in a nutshell.
Thank you. Councilman Tungle. Any comment on Ordinance 2023-01?
No comment.
Thank you very much, Councilman Robinson.
Yeah, I don't have anything.
Thank you, Councilman Bell.
No, nothing at this time.
Thank you, Councilman Nicholson.
No comments. Thank you.
Councilman Coleman.
Yes, thank you. As we are going to be possibly acquiring a new asset, I'm going to want to know what are the going to be expenses going to be reoccurring for next fiscal years for this piece of equipment.
You can have that brought before you. Ben is prepared to speak to it now.
So there's kind of hard to delineate what additional expenses are going to be. As for right now, there's no additional expenses other than insurance on that trailer. All of the medical supplies that has been suggested by the DHSS team that's been working with us is all stuff that we currently carry or that we'll have in the clinic to provide.
Great. If you could come up with the answer to that, I would appreciate it for the next meeting. For this year's expenses is nothing new, but for the next years, I would like to know what might be reoccurring in expenses for this piece of asset. Thank you.
Is that information for the next meeting?
Okay, thank you. Councilman Ruby, no? No comment? There are no comments from the council. City clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment on the, in person or in Zoom? Or telephone?
No one has signed up, sir.
Okay, thank you. I'll restate the motion, and motion is to adopt ordinance 2023-01. Creating a budget amendment number 5 to fiscal year 2023 budget, accepting the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services Mobile Integrated Health Fair Medicine Rural Extension of Care Grant for $166,000 to fund a mobile medicine trailer, accepting the EPA Brownsfield Community-Wide Assessment Grant for $500,000, an increase in the appropriation for generator fuel in the electric utility fund by $1,850,000. I'll request a roll call vote.
Just one point of order, sir. You did say it was a motion to approve this ordinance, and the motion was actually to introduce it and set it for public hearing and second reading on March 28th. So I just wanted to make that clarification.
We'll introduce the schedule it for a hearing and second reading on March 28th.
All right, you ready for your roll call vote?
Yes.
All righty. Luby?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Nicholson?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Tungle?
Yes.
And Coleman?
Yes.
Well, on a vote of 6-0, this ordinance will be moved to for a second reading, public hearings, and second reading on March 28, 2023. Ordinance 2023-01. Next item is council directives to the city manager. We need to have a motion and second, please. Councilman Luby.
So just I'll clarify for people who can't hear everything. The council member Coleman is asking me if this wasn't the time set for executive session. And actually, we're going to do the council directives to city manager first, and then community input and announcement, then the executive session.
Yeah. Councilman Luby.
Okay. I do have a directive to the city manager to bring forward to council a proposed ordinance change to the Unalaska Code of Ordinance 6.40.050, application for tax refund to include an increase in the dollar amount to $400 and a change in the residency requirements to be a registered voter in the city of in the state of Alaska with being qualified to vote in Unalaska, and also or proof of a PFD application, which doesn't require citizenship if they do that. It also establishes residency, and also to research the idea of the real ID as an option as proof of residency, and see if that would be easier for administration.
Been moved by Councilman Luby to reevaluate the get a better ordinance, as she said. Is there a second?
No second.
Second by Councilman Bell. At this time, is there any further discussion on that directive? Councilman Robinson.
Yes, thank you. I would like to see something written in on that ordinance change with the real ID. I think that's something we could incorporate into it. And I am a little hesitant about the voter registration requirements. I'm not sure I want to go there because there are some seniors that don't vote. And Peggy brought up a really good point that of foreign nationals that live here, have been here for years, but they don't and can't register to vote. So for that reason, I would like to, I'm kind of hesitant on the voter registration requirements. Maybe some of the PFD requirements could be in, or I'd be in favor of, but I'll leave it at that and see what goes.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Robinson. For a comment.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's either or. The PFD doesn't require citizenship, so it could be either or, I guess. But again, if just put together the best proposal you can, and then maybe when it comes, we can make amendments at that time. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Councilman Bell?
Yeah, I was going to say the directive is probably a little more specific than it needs to be, but I think we can get something back that gets us a little closer to something that all the council can agree on. So, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that. What we're trying to do. All right. This time I'll have a roll call vote on the directive.
Sir, Ms. Corman?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
And Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
On a roll call vote, 6-0, this directive has been approved to move on to city management. This time, our community input and announcements is the final opportunity to provide information to the council or make announcements. If you have comments for the podium, state your name, show your real ID. phone or Zoom?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. This time I'll ask for a motion to go into executive session.
I'll make a motion to go into executive session to discuss personnel issues related to the city manager, matters of which, if discussed in public, may tend to harm the reputation of a person. Present in the executive session will be the mayor and council members, along with interim city council manager Chris Laddick and acting city manager Bill Humpka.
Second.
Been moved and seconded to go into executive session. Roll call.
Or you can just ask if there's any objection.
Without objection, no. We're in executive session at 7:24 p.m.
All right, for the folks on Zoom, Mr. Tungle and Mr. Laddick, if you would stay on and we'll use this connection for the executive session.
Five-minute break.
Bong and Chris, we're going to take a five-minute break.
Okay, we'll take a five-minute break, too.
8:19. Councilman Robinson, second by Councilman Nicholson. And call for a directive. And second, motion and second. Still putting it together.
So I'll make a motion to direct the city manager to contact Jim Hunt to bring him out for an interview for city manager.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Robinson, second by Councilman Nicholson to direct the city manager to contact Mr. Jim Hunt, the applicant for city manager, and get a time schedule and get schedule him for a meeting and interview with the council.
Want a discussion or are we going to go straight to a vote?
What's that?
Do you want to call for discussion with council on that, or you want to go straight to a vote since you're looking at me?
without objection, I guess, the seconded by Nicholson.
Mm-hmm.
Without objection, Do the vote. Roll call.
Okay. This is on the motion for the directive made by Mr. Robinson. Bell?
Yes.
Nicholson?
Yes.
Tungle?
Yes.
Luby?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
And Coleman?
No.
On a roll call vote of five yeses and one nay, the directive has been approved and passed. Being no further business, this meeting is adjourned at 8:24 p.m. Good night, Unalaska. Good night.
Good night, Chris. Mom. I'm going to end the Zoom meeting.
Chris?
Yes.